What? 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 Hey, what's up, y'all? It's Stone Cold Steve Austin here. And I know what you're thinking. Man, he's a tough sumbitch. Man, he's gonna go out there, he's gonna stomp a mud hole in somebody, and he's gonna walk it dry. Well, you're right about that, but something else you're right about is I'm getting older. You're used to me selling you things, whether it's my Austin 316 t-shirt, or whether it's me selling you Tide on the fucking Super Bowl for some reason. But not today. Today, I'm here to tell you about AARP. That's right. The reason I'm saying what nowadays ain't because some shitbags in the ring taking up my airtime. No, it's because I can't fucking hear a goddamn thing. It's because I'm damn near 60 years old. I just looked it up to double check because I wasn't sure, but I am close. I'm 58 years old, and that means I'm here on behalf of the old people. So next time you're out at a Golden Corral and they ask, are you eligible for a senior's discount? You whip out that AARP card, you flip them the double birds, and you give them a stunner, goddammit. And that's the bottom line. At least I think it's the bottom line. I can't really see too well. I need my cheaters. But I think that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so.
So here we are, Nick. We finally pay off a joke that I didn't understand from the last episode until we got here. You said the next episode was the son of Zeus and we're doing Hercules. I didn't get that joke until right now. You said it at the end and I go, gosh, I hope Nick cuts that last part out because that was terrible. I don't know what the fuck that's about because we are not doing an episode on Hercules, the actual fictional character in mythology. Then we get to this next episode and I realize we are doing Hercules Hernandez and I go, oh, that's what that joke's about. Maybe it's that new LA comedy you're doing out there, Nick, where you got to have it so subtle that you laugh at the jokes like a week later. I don't know if that's a new style of comedy. You say something and you're like, no, you'll figure that out a week later. Trust me.
But I would say my style of comedy is so subtle that you often don't know it's there.
Like right now, we don't even know. Was that an attempt at comedy? Was there a joke there, Tyler? I don't know. You are labeled a humorist sometimes. I know you're writing for the New Yorker now, so.
You know, it's really below a humorist to talk to comedians and critique their work, so I'm not even gonna dignify that with a response.
Okay. All right.
Well, I guess that's the start of the show. Hello, this is Tim Bilp. I'm Nick Alexander, and I am joined by the Tyler Wood.
Hey, Nick.
Hello.
I'm always ready to respond to what it's going to be, and I wasn't ready for that one.
You know, I used to look forward to my intros, which will be coming up very shortly, but you know what? Now I look forward to how shitty Tyler's are, and that makes me equally as happy.
And much like the subject of discussion was half man, half god, we're joined by half scout, half man, Jake Baddick.
There you go. I like it. Sometimes it's just straightforward. I like it. That's a nice intro. Not as much fun as shitting on Tyler.
So today we're talking about a guy that seems to be slipping through the cracks of wrestling history a little bit. It's not someone that gets enough talk or love. So today's episode is all about reminding you of the very underrated career of Hercules Hernandez.
Hercules is, he's one of those guys that's been everywhere.
Yeah.
And had an incredible look, was in some big matches, did his run through the territories, got to WWF the right time and or wrong time. You know, if he would have came in a little bit earlier, does he have a better run? I don't know. Maybe. He was definitely a body guy, but I don't know. Like, it'll be interesting to discuss where Hercules' place in wrestling is and some of the things that could have turned out better or different, or did he have the career that he was always supposed to have. So it'll be interesting to discuss and talk about maybe some what-if situations with Hercules today. And that's always the fun one with an episode like this.
I personally didn't know a lot about Hercules before this, and
no fucking shit.
But from what I've been able to gather, he was a territory guy, went into the WWF, and his career kind of petered out a little bit after that. He had a little bit of a Japan run, but I think Hercules, you guys might find this fair to say, he was one of those guys that he's like the foundation of wrestling. It's a solid mid-card journeyman that, like Jake, you said, amazing look. And I think he's a solid part of wrestling. You know, wrestling as an industry, it's got a lot of pieces and parts. Everybody can't be at the top. Everybody can't be at the bottom. And I think he was a solid mid-card guy that turned heads from time to time.
Yeah, there's definitely, it always seems like he was much in the same sense that Hacksaw was the setup guy for a heel to go face Hogan. Hercules is kind of the setup babyface guy. You know, somebody who Hacksaw would have wrestled to become that number two babyface guy, or somebody else that's going against a heel champion. He is that setup guy for said babyface. If you beat Hercules, you're a big deal. I mean, I think that's kind of, if you were to believe, you know, Billy Jack Haynes' shooter interview, he's being set up to be one of the top babyfaces in the territory. And, you know, his feud with Hercules would be kind of laying the groundwork for that, if you were to believe that conspiracy theory of Billy Jack. And you can pick and choose which conspiracy theory of Billy Jack you want to follow. So that's up to you.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a tough cover because there's no Hercules shoot. There's not like a lot of Herc interviews. I think it was like maybe a little too old school for that. So everything's coming secondhand from his peers, his friends, or us. There is the 1997 Disney documentary Hercules, but they really Hollywood it up and don't even discuss the territories. But pretty universally, there's a lot of people, they talk about Herc on their shoots, on their podcasts, and he seems like a very well-liked guy. Everyone speaks highly of him. They like his like work rate size combo, and pretty much everyone sums him up. Good guy, good wrestler. Definitely enjoyed the extracurriculars that pro wrestling in the 80s offered. But solid dude, it seems.
Oh, you did a joke earlier, like at the start of this whole thing about the Disney documentary thing. That's right. I just realized you did a joke then. Man, didn't have to wait a week for that one. Sorry.
That's an underrated Disney movie. I'll die on that hill.
All right.
Raymond Constantine Fernandez, which is a very intense name, was born May 7th, 1956 in New York City.
Everybody loves Raymond Constantine Fernandez. Oh, hey, I'm from New York. It was a Ray Romano. That's real cool.
I don't want to do the job, Ray.
Wonderful Brad Garrett there, bud.
Who, you know what? When we came to this episode, I didn't think we would find out that I had a Ray Romano to be matched by Nick's Brad Garrett impersonation.
I don't know where that came from. I've never done that in my life.
No, Tyler, you got to do your Peter Boyle impersonation to complete the whole trilogy.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I did not watch a lot of Everyone Loves Ray, I'll be honest with you.
Much like the real Hercules, Ray had a dramatic childhood. His mom passed away from cancer when he was at the age of 6. From there, his family relocated to Tampa, Florida. Ray wrestled in high school. He married his high school sweetheart, and then he went off to the Air Force for 3 years. Following the Air Force, he obviously slayed the nine-headed Hydra. He captured the Erymanthian boar and stole 3 apples from Hesperides. Some fucking Greek fuck. Then Ray would get into the wrestling business in his early 20s, getting trained by Hiro Matsuda.
One of those guys that trained just about every Florida guy and made him tough as shit. So already, once you hear, like, trained by Hiro Matsuda, you already know that Hercules is not a guy to be fucked with, in the same way that Paul Orndorff is not to be fucked with, and a myriad of other Florida guys who are not to be fucked with. If the biggest pussy is Hulk Hogan, I guess. I think that's saying something, because I think in Hulk Hogan's prime, if he had to kick some ass, he would. Just would rather politically fuck you over behind your back. But probably if it was a bar fight, he might do all right. So if that's your biggest pussy of the group, then just goes to show how tough Hiro Matsuda trainees are.
Why are you calling Hulk Hogan a pussy? Did you not watch No Holds Barred, Jake? Jesus Christ.
He electrified a man to death. he won't kick his ass, but he'll electrify you, individual, which is terrifying.
Herc got some real life learning and, you know, experience on how to do this shit, mostly hanging out in Florida and Texas in the early days. But by 81, it looked like he was getting steady work for Eddie Graham and CWF. Also did some spots over in Houston and wrestling under his earthling name, Ray Hernandez.
And just the Florida territory. Everybody talks how amazing it is. Like, even in the different times they've been through there, it was basically just Florida. Like, you had Pensacola, you had Tampa, you had Orlando, Miami, St. Pete, just all the Florida towns. So everything's just in the state of Florida, which is sizable, but you're hitting all of the armories. You get to the town early. You're pretty much in a beach town. So basically, if you take off for the show right away, get to the next town, get up, you can go to the beach. Show at night doesn't start until 6, 7, so you don't have to be in the building till like 4 or 5. So you could be on the beach all day, just having a few drinks, sober up for the show, go wrestle a match, sweat it all out, and then just go on to the next show. So gym, beach, tan on the beach, and then wrestle and make a shitload of money every night. I mean, that's the dream. And you're also wrestling some of the best wrestlers of the day in that Florida territory.
These kids today don't know.
Thank you, Tyler. We appreciate your contributions to Ten Bell Pod. I appreciate it immensely. I'm glad you're here. Those correspondence classes are really starting to pay off, as Bob Uecker would say in Major League, another movie that Tyler was too young to remember.
In 1982, Herc joined NWA Central States territory, mostly referred to as Kansas City or, you know, Harley's territory. We've brought this territory up a good bit. Not the best place to work out of, like money and fame wise, but it's like a easier, lower pressure place to work out some stuff and punch up that hour before you head up to New York.
Well, yeah, it'd definitely be a place that he would be working on top some of these towns or working top tier talent. Where Florida, like, you have to be really good to work your way up the card there. Where Central States, you can kind of be the top guy there and know what it's like to main event and try and work a main event angle. But yeah, working Nebraska and Kansas is a little bit different than wrestling in Pensacola every night.
In Central States, Ray worked against a rookie, Al Snow. He lost a Missouri title shot at Dick the Bruiser. He teamed up with Dewey Robertson, a.k.a. The Missing Link, and they got a couple runs with the Central State tag titles. He also just ran into a very interesting mix of names, people like Bobo Brazil, Manny Fernandez, and of course, Harley Race. And it was somewhere in 82-ish that Ray started working as Hercules Hernandez.
I mean, obviously you need some sort of a unique name other than just Ray Hernandez. I'm like, all right, well, who is this guy? Is going to be like somebody who looks like Jose Lothario? And then all of a sudden, this giant of a man with the Jerry curl jacked to the gills. I'm like, oh, when I heard the name Ray Hernandez, this is not what I expected. But when you say, oh, this guy is Hercules Hernandez, you're like, oh, this guy's big and muscle bound. And then obviously you know right away what to expect. Because you got to keep in mind, some wrestling posters is just somebody's name. It's not like now where you just have posters full of pictures and you're like, oh, somebody's got to stand out because of their picture. No, you needed a unique name to stand out because sometimes the only thing they're putting on the poster is just your name.
In January 83, the Mighty Hercules did a tour of all Japan, and there he got to work with Giant Baba and Jumbo Tsuruta, so adding some, you know, more cool names to the list and some more good learning experiences.
Well, and also, too, he's probably, you know, was well-liked enough that somebody would suggest him for Japan. That's the other thing you got to keep in mind, too, when you hear about these guys doing tours of Japan. Like, somebody has to like you, speak up for you, and tell the Japan offices that, hey, this guy is good. You should use him. And they're like, okay, we'll bring him on. What's he look like? Oh, that's what he looks like? Yeah, definitely bring him over. Like, have a good look. Not be an asshole. Be a good enough wrestler. And you'll get these opportunities to go over to Japan and learn the craft and expand your knowledge and horizons. So already that just lends you all to believe that, you know, well-liked, people respected him and what he was doing. Because if he was dog shit and the biggest asshole ever, he wouldn't get these opportunities, especially this early in his career.
Yeah, that sounds like just being like a solid workhorse, just being there, plugging away, doing what you're supposed to do, and hitting all the right checkboxes.
Back in the USA, very nice. Herc made a quick stop back over in Central States before heading to Jim Crockett Promotions that summer. There, he teamed up with Jody Hamilton, who banged Nick Patrick's mama and was also the masked assassin.
Oh, I don't know why. Every time somebody had a good body, Dusty put a bodysuit on him. You had Dan Spivey, best body ever had. You got Scott Hall, Jack to the Gill. Put a bodysuit on him and call him Starship Coyote. And then all of a sudden you get Ray Hernandez, $1 million body. What's Dusty do? Puts a bodysuit on him. I don't understand it. It'll make no sense. And they put a mask on him too. Got a good looking face too. Ray Hernandez, he got that good look and he's got that nice hair. He put a mask on it too on top of a bodysuit. That's how good his body was. He's like, I gotta cover your face too, because people gonna know how good your body are if they see your face.
Listen here, Daddy, you know how hard it is to find a bodysuit that would fit them traps on Hercules Hernandez? Them things was busting out of anything I put him in. You put hard times on Dusty.
K&H does not have enough spandex in their warehouse, baby, to cover them biceps that are on Hercules Hernandez, but we will find a way. We shall find a way to cover that amazing body. And then one day we're going to take that off him and people are going to be wowed, wowed by the amazement of his body. Amazement is what I'm saying. The amazement of his body.
Working as Masked Assassin number two, the assassin started beating up on combos of Johnny Weaver, Mike Rotundo, Bret Hart, and Rick McCord.
Bret Hart is actually Barry Horowitz, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
Yes, because I think Barry Horowitz was Bret Hart for a while. Then obviously he realized, oh, I can't be Bret Hart because there's a Bret Hart. And that's like his name.
Huh.
No wonder he thinks he's better than Bret Hart. The assassins would take on Rufus R. Jones and Bugsy McGraw on the first ever match on the first ever major pro wrestling pay-per-view, Starrcade 83, as they were managed by your boy, Paul Jones.
Starrcade 83 was the beginning of Dusty taking over Crockett, because it was like this big grouping of these promotions. They were trying to do a super show. Like, you had the Florida territory and Jim Crockett promotion and Atlanta. They were all their separate territories, but they were coming together for Starrcade, like this big super show that was going to highlight the top stars in each one of these promotions that all eventually just ended up being a part of Jim Crockett promotions once they bought up Georgia and then Florida from then on. But this is like Dusty going, oh, baby, this Jim Crockett promotion fella, that he had a lot of money. Maybe the old American dream needs to move up from Florida and take a little trip on up to Charlotte, North Carolina. And, you know, I think the booking office is just a Broad Bend Road. I'll be right around the corner, baby, or just down the road in Matthews. That's where I'll go, baby. That's where the Jim Crockett promotion. I'm Italian, baby. Did I tell you that? I love Michael Jordan. Love Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan win national champions at this time. Dean Smith is a goddamn genius. I want to be the Dean Smith of this promotion. I want to be running shit and a Michael Jordan. That's how good I am. I'm a player coach, baby.
So the assassins beat Rufus and Bugsy to kick off the pay-per-view era of wrestling. And that takes us into 84, where Herc tagged up with Assassin to take on people like our guy, Brickhouse Brown, Dory Funk Jr., Wahoo, and of course, Dusty.
I have a note here. So over the course of his career, according to Cage Match, so take that with a grain of salt, but what is documented on Cage Match, over 1,600 matches. Jesus. In Hercules' career, the most active month was February of 84. He wrestled 29 matches.
Damn.
11 were in South Carolina, 8 were in North Carolina, 6 in Georgia, 2 in Virginia, 1 in Canada, and 1 in the great state of Louisiana. And 22 of those matches were against Jimmy Valiant. So that was a very busy month for him.
Busy? Are you? He's wrestling Jimmy Valiant? It's the easiest fucking money he's ever made in his entire life. Let me wrestle Jimmy Valiant 29 days out of a fucking month. I'll be a millionaire and I won't have a bruise, a cut, a ding on me whatsoever. You know, people ask me this all the time, who would you rather trade places in this world? I'll tell you what. How about Hercules Hernandez, 1984, in February, where he's wrestling Jimmy Valiant 29 times in a month?
Some of these, they're on the same day, like February 19th, they wrestled in...
He had to break a sweat. He didn't break a sweat in the first one. Of course he had to wrestle in the second one. He's like, I didn't get enough sweat flowing. I need to burn some calories. Let's have a second or a third match.
Dude, this is several places. It's like the, I know you guys have heard the stories where they would have an early show somewhere and then have a late show somewhere else. So yep. They're wrestling Fayetteville, Charlotte, same day. They're wrestling Columbia, South Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, same day. This is crazy shit.
Especially the ones where you, like, you did Fayetteville earlier in the day and you went back to Charlotte because you lived in Charlotte. So you were like 10 minutes away from your house. So like those double shots were always the best when you wrestled somebody earlier and then you came back to Charlotte because you lived there. Like, if you're going to do a double shot, that's the way they do it. It's not like doing Charlotte and then going to Fayetteville. Then you've done fucked yourself and then you're like out on the road. But when you have a double shot and you're coming back for that main show, which usually in the main show, if you're going to do a double shot, Charlotte would be it because, you know, the Coliseum and the Crockett's were kind of that way too. So like, yeah, if you're going to do a double shot, always coming back to where your house is the nicest and the best. So that's why people loved Mid-Atlantic and the Crockett promotion, because a lot of these places you just discussed are a couple hours away from each other. Even, you know, Columbia and Savannah, Georgia, like we're talking about drives that are less than 4 hours. You know, you get up and go do one, or if you're on early and then you make the show that night. So you have that ability.
Yeah, and it was this big, long run with Jimmy Valiant that would end Herc's time in Jim Crockett when Valiant unmasked him, revealing him as Hercules. And, you know, you can't have the son of Zeus out here with Zeus throwing lightning bolts at people and shit. Although this spelling of Hercules is technically the Roman Hercules, so his dad's technically Jupiter. Hercules with an A is technically the son of Zeus, but that's not how that. It's just not how it went here.
Was that a history lesson or a joke? I don't know. I don't think I'm gonna figure that out in a week. So just tell me now.
No, that's for real. It's all okay. Backwards. The Disney movie's wrong. Everyone's wrong.
All right, cool.
In spring of 84, Ray was off to Mid-South to again be in a tag team, to again wear a mask, and to again be the second as he was wrestling with Mr. Wrestling, making him Mr. Wrestling number two. And Herc would always say things like, hey, just call me Wrestling. Mr. Wrestling is my partner's name. That was a joke.
Okay, cool. Oh, that's a good one. All right, cool.
To kick off his time there, he hopped right into a feud between Mr. Wrestling and Magnum TA. After a couple months, Ray would also be unmasked and go back to Hercules Hernandez. He started a feud with Jim Duggan, and they had just a ton of coal miner glove matches.
I mean, I'm sure Bill Watts was just jerking his dick watching this. Just two big studs beating the shit out of each other for a coal miner's glove. Like, this is Bill Watts' wet dream. Like, this is just all he's ever wanted in his life is just two jacked up dudes that are massive beating the piss out of each other.
Him or Vince McMahon? Who do you think liked him more?
Ooh, that's a good question. See, for Bill Watts, you can have a little bit of a belly on you. Mm-hmm. You know, where Vince, he needs the vascularity. Like, really needs abs. He needs to see the striations for him to come. Because if you're just like a big, like just beefy looking dude. Like, see, I feel like Bill Watts could jerk off to Jerry Blackwell. Where Vince, he needs vascularity and he would just embarrass somebody like a Jerry Blackwell.
By late 84, Hercules had joined Skandar Akbar's stable, Devastation Inc., and teamed up with Ted DiBiase to win the Mid-South Tag Team titles from Rock and Roll Express, and pretty big deal to be feuding with Ricky Morton and old Bob Gibson in the 80s.
And teaming with Ted DiBiase in Mid-South. Like, you are in the catbird seat if you're involved with anything that Ted DiBiase is doing in Mid-South at this time. At this time, Ted is the fucking man. Like, they are discussing him to be NWA World Heavyweight Champion. He's probably one of the best wrestlers in the world at this time. Like, it's debatable, but he's definitely top five, maybe even top three wrestlers at this time as far as, like, in-ring ability, character, promo, everything you look for in a world champion. Like, that's what he is at this time. And he's so good that he could rip off the welfare system in Mississippi if he wanted to.
By early 85, Herc's time in Mid-South was winding down. He did a quick run in WCCW before setting up shop back over in CWF, pretty much right away beating Brian Blair for the Florida Southern Heavyweight title. So the kid's back, well-traveled, conquering hero, and they give him a solid push. He defended it against Tiger Conway Jr., Billy Jack Haynes, and Wahoo, while also picking up the NWA Florida Heavyweight title from Hector Guerrero. But as double champ, someone had done work to work and worked themselves into a shoot because there was a real-life backstage fight between Herc and Wahoo, getting him stripped from both belts and kicked out of the territory.
Thing you can't fuck with Wahoo. He's a fucking star.
Mm-hmm.
And also too, Wahoo likes to drink and he likes to get in fights. That's I really wish this world knew more about Wahoo McDaniel. And for the good reasons and for some of the wrong reasons too, because like if you want a dark side of the ring, like do it on Wahoo McDaniel, because that man was a madman. Every story about Wahoo McDaniels is just not normal whatsoever and paints a picture of like pro wrestlers just being off the wall, bonkers, not acceptable in society whatsoever. And Wahoo is the prime definition of that. And who knows why this backstage fight started? Probably just Wahoo just decided one day. Or he's like, you know what? I'm going to try beating him up. Why not? I'm going to try.
Hercules rebounded pretty strong and landed on his feet because by the end of 85, he'd be in WWF, where he started out being managed by Classy Freddie Blassie. So start out, typical WWF stuff, working house shows, occasionally filmed for a TV spot, and Herc, who had just about as much pay-per-view experience as anyone in the world at this point, would be on the LA leg of WrestleMania Season 2, Episode 1, facing Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, losing to a top rope crossbody.
I mean, if you're going to wrestle anybody in pay-per-view, it might as well be Ricky Steamboat. So when it comes to draws of opponent, that's about as good as it gets.
By summer of 86, Freddie was about done and ready to retire. So on August 16th, 86, All-Star Wrestling, Freddie Blassie sold half interest of his roster. The Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkoff, Hercules, he sold it to Slick. And I believe the whole half-interest thing was just dropped after Fred was out of there. Slick was a young manager at this point and seemingly didn't have the connections or negotiating skills to get Hercules booked in top spots. Herc got kept in the mid card until October 86 when Herc's contract was sold, bought out by the GOAT, Bobby Heenan.
So that's what we're discussing in Hercules' WWF run is him being bought and sold like property. Like this is, I feel like, you know, when they talk about things that Vince is very interested in booking wise, you know, like, hey, you know, Ted DiBiase is just an extension of Vince McMahon. I feel like the idea of buying and selling a human being is the type of storyline that Vince is like, yes, this is what I'm talking about. We need to get people more comfortable with buying and selling of human beings. Like a trade, like a circus animal. Like, hey, this elephant's getting kind of broken down. You can get him on the cheap, and then you can kind of run him into the ground. This is what I'm talking about. Where you get a prime stud racehorse. They can do tricks where somebody can be doing a lasso while standing on top of the horse, and the horse's back is like crumbling, but it's still strong enough to support a person while they're doing the lasso trick. That's what I'm talking about. And then you sell the contract for that horse off to somebody else right before its back breaks in half. That's what I'm talking about. This is the storyline I want to get behind.
These are just fillers for the actual slavery storyline that is coming up in about 10 minutes. So in no time with his new representation, Hercules had himself a world title shot against Hulk Hogan, November 86 at Saturday night's main event 8.
Who won?
You can Oh, so much drama. You can see Heenan paying Slick for Herc. It's like the little segment right before it. So this was filmed November 15th and aired November 29th. A short, typical Hogan match. Herc hits him with everything. Hulk's a big boot, leg drop. Hogan gets the win as he is immortal and Hercules is but half.
This is best case scenario. When you're a big monster like this, you come into WWF, they position you properly. You wrestle Hulk Hogan on a big show. You get that payoff and they keep you around for a while until they're done with you.
Yeah.
Nick, how hard did your dick get writing that half immortal joke?
Oh, that was a joke?
Oh. Also, fun little just side note here. One of the first matches that airs where Hercules is under Bobby Heenan is against Jack Foley, who you may know as Dude Love. So I think most people agree that Hercules, his best ring work was pre-WWF. But as far as like notoriety and prestige and getting a world title shot on national TV, that's probably the biggest moment of his career. Because once Hulk conquered the mighty Hercules, it was kind of it. Like the monster had been fed to the monster killer. So you better start moving some merch if you want to stick around. while the steep decline doesn't come till a little later, he had basically served his purpose his first year with the company, and everyone pretty much agreed Herc was just a nice guy. He was more on the shy, quiet side, so he's not in the back politicking for his spot. He just came to work and did whatever the sheet said, no complaints. By fall of 86, Hercules feuded with Billy Jack Haynes over their use of their finisher,
the Full Nelson.
What is it with the Full Nelson having huge traps and WWE? Because I keep wanting to say it, he reminds me a lot of Chris Masters in looks, and then now they both have the Full Nelson as the finisher too. Do you think Vince just forgets he does shit and then it's like, I got an idea for you?
In as much as he talks shit about the territories, he definitely does territory behavior in that, like, hey, remember when this angle worked like a few years ago? Yeah, people have already forgotten about that. Let's do that again. Also, too, I think Vince is partial to the Full Nelson because you have a big muscular guy behind you and having full control of you and where he can take you. I think that's very exciting to Vince McMahon. Allegedly.
On a Superstars that aired January 17th, 87, Herc put away an enhancement talent before Bobby Heenan hopped on the mic, called out Billy Jack, and said he'd like to see him break out a Hercules version of the hold. Billy Jack was backstage working out the details of the Kennedy assassination when the news got back to him, so he marched down to the ring. He was willing to give Herc a free shot at locking it in, but Haynes got into it with Heenan, shoved him, and Herc took that opening as a chance to blindside him, and the feud was on. Billy and Herc hit the house show circuit for most of February and then March of 87 before heading in to WrestleMania 3 in front of a reported 93 trillion people at the Pontiac Superdome, brother. For a match that's trying to end in a Full Nelson, it's pretty good. They both end up like tumbling to the outside when Billy locks Herc in the hold. Billy Jack slaps it back on and they both get counted out. Bobby hits Billy in the back with a knee, so we get the whole chicken shit hill chase scene. And then Herc decks him with a fistful of chains, busting him all the way open. And that would lead to a series of chain matches between the two that would chew up basically all of Herc's 1987.
Actually, I watched this match in wrestling school. They used it to describe psychology. The fact that it led to chain matches, it's just more of a reason why like this match leads into this. So now this gimmick match makes sense because of this particular incident.
To add to it, Herc had some matches with fucking Bruno Sammartino. He did a big old house show run with Ken Patera. He feuded with superstar Billy Graham. And then he'd be on the first ever match on the first ever Survivor Series with the Heenan squad taking the L to Steamboat, Macho, Duggan, Brutus, and Jake the Snake.
Yeah, and that first Survivor Series match, it was super fucking over because it was like those guys that are like just below Hogan, every one of them was like on a team and just the ovation of that team in general is incredible.
On the build to WrestleMania 4, Herc got into it with the Ultimate Warrior, and this is Warrior's first like real feud with the company. February 7th, 88 Wrestling Challenge, Herc was DQ'd for using the chain during his match with Warrior. They end up in a tug of war over the chain, tugging on it until it snapped, and this obvious cocaine-filled act of rage and criminal property damage by Warrior led to a match at WrestleMania 4. Not part of that year's tournament. It's just a good old grudge match.
So, kayfabe, what were the chains for?
To look cool.
Because Hercules had chains around his neck.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's it. Yeah, he just wore him to the ring.
All right.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I was missing something in mythology where, like, Hercules broke chains or, like...
I'm sure there is something like that, definitely, because I remember images of Hercules breaking chains. Like, I feel like that's something that would have been done, so...
I mean, it depends if you're talking about the Roman Hercules or the Greek
there
Hercules.
There we go. That's what I'm looking for. So depends on what mythology we're actually studying here. But I do know, like, they, in Warriors, like, hit piece that got released, they talked a lot about how, like, you know, Hercules was an okay wrestler, but he wasn't anybody that could carry Ultimate Warrior to a good match because you really need somebody who's really talented to do that. Like, Ted DiBiase kind of shitting on Hercules for not being a good wrestler.
It's like not shitting on Warrior for meeting him halfway. It's just like he wasn't good enough to take Warrior all the way to the top.
They were trying to shit on Warrior, but Hercules caught some shrapnel in all of it. Mm-hmm. So that was a little unfair.
Warrior gets the win in the WrestleMania match when this like double pin situation where Warrior gets his arm up, Herc does not. So that's how that ends. Following this, creative has nothing for you, brother. Herc wrestles a ton of house shows. He has a decent mix of winning and losing, putting people over like Bam Bam, Warrior on TV. He beats George South on a Superstars taping. That's fun. And then he'd also be on the first ever SummerSlam, and he'd take the loss to Jake the Snake. Jake, who could have a better match? Jake Manning with his tent or Jake the Snake with his snake?
I feel like Jake would know what to do if he wrestled a snake. Like, I feel like he has that ability. Worst case, he would just let the snake bite him for however long. Because he wasn't afraid of that, because he had to do that to get Macho Man to sign off on getting bit by a snake. So.
That story's fucking insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I've also, too, like, it's told by Jake the Snake Roberts, so we don't know really if it's true or not. But there's a hint of Macho Man being a psychopath that makes you believe all that. So. Yeah.
Then in the fall of 88, Hercules would be sold into slavery when Heenan sold him to Ted DiBiase. Right away, Hercules was not on board, which is likely the case for all slaves. Just like that, Herc was a good guy. That's really all you need. Turn on Bobby and Ted and you are a face. New face, Hercules went off on a tour of house shows against Ted, as that was the business model of the day. Then at Saturday Night's Main Event 18, November 16th, 88, Hercules had a battle of freedom against Virgil, the tone deafness is deafening.
Oh my God.
Welcome to three white guys on a podcast talking about sensitive race stuff. The show where three white guys on a podcast talk about sensitive race stuff. And here's your host, the Man Scout Jake Manning, Nick Alexander, and Tyler Wood. Three white guys on a podcast talking about sensitive race stuff is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
You guys go ahead. Jump in if you have anything to say here.
Nope, not going to say a fucking word. And don't you dare make a joke that people find out is actually racist, Nicholas. They'll only find out a week later, so.
In the pre-match promo, Jesse the Body interviews Ted, who claims that since he bought Hercules fair and square, Hercules is being un-American by not being his slave. Would you guys like to spend the next hour unpacking that, or do you just want to hold it in until it kills us?
Yeah, let's not discuss that.
Okay. Fine with the latter.
To top it off, just the big problematic cherry on top. As Herc comes to the ring, the Body goes, "Hercules looks like Kuta Kinte."
Oh, Jesus.
That'll do it. That was the final.
That's why we don't hear a lot. That's why we don't hear a lot about this match or this angle. That's why it gets lost in time.
Oh, geez. Yeah, it was. But Virgil is a bump machine. He's a great seller, and he puts Herc over very strong in what is basically a squash match.
I thought you were going to go, but you know, it's wrestling and we got to love this anyway.
So now freed slave Hercules faced Ted at Survivor Series as their respective teams battled. Ted eliminates Hercules from the contest, but Herc like distracts him long enough for him to get rolled up by Randy Savage. And that's basically the end of the feud. Following this feud with Ted, Hercules had a little bit of beef with Haku, who he eventually beat at WrestleMania 5 in the opening match.
The debate between those two, I watched that. That was fucking odd. It was very strange. Two guys that are not really talkers, even though Haku had Bobby Heenan. It was very interesting. Very interesting. It's not really worth it.
Okay.
I thought that was a joke, and we were going to find that out like a week later. Like, that actually didn't happen, and this is a joke you're making. Okay, that was an actual thing?
Oh, yeah, cool. It was a debate that was setting up the match, and yeah, Haku's not the best talker. He leaned on Bobby a little bit, but Hercules was basically like, "I'm going to beat you up." He was not a strong promo guy, I will say that.
He was like very in the middle promo-wise, I think. Like, he could hit his 30-second mark of screaming, but like, you shouldn't give Herc like 14 minutes on the mic or anything.
You shouldn't have him debate Bobby the Brain Heenan.
No, yeah, exactly. The greatest talker ever. All right, so from there, this is when Hercules goes on a bit of a downswing. He'll occasionally get a TV win against a job guy just to like maintain some credibility, but he's basically used to get people over like Rick Rude and Greg Valentine. He has a long run with Dino Bravo, mostly losing throughout 89. And then WrestleMania 6, he lost to Earthquake in less than 5 minutes.
I remember that. That was like just kind of abrupt. But also made like Earthquake look like a fucking monster, because like Herc had been featured so much for him to get destroyed like that. You're like, whoa, this fucking Earthquake guy, he's fucking scary.
There's always that weird balance of like, oh, why are you like burying this guy? But also, holy fuck, Earthquake's going to kill Hulk Hogan when they meet. Like, mm-hmm. it's just like, mm-hmm. you know, there's a middle ground there. So things were looking pretty bleak as Hercules headed into the 90s. But at that point, Herc had met Paul Roma. They were travel buds. They were workout partners. And by the summer of 90, they'd be teammates forming Power and Glory, managed by Slick. Super underrated tag team.
God damn, they're vascular.
I don't know how they didn't get the belts, because they were very vascular, very muscular. Their tag shit's incredible. I mean, fuck, FTR took one of their fucking moves and does it all the time. Like, I mean, just goes to show like how good they were, that you see like a move that they did, like you see that on TV about every week now, decades later. I mean,
is it a powerplex?
The superplex with the dive on the top. Splash, that right there. Like, it's, I mean, Power and Glory, man. It's fucking, they got the look right. I mean, the 90s sunglasses is the only thing that's a lot of, doesn't really fit, but like the shirt that says Power and the shirt that says Glory and, you know, their look and the presentation and their packaging. Like, I'm surprised we didn't see more of them. It just goes to show that there was just too many strong tag teams at the time for them to really break out of that middle rung era. But yeah, great fucking tag team. I know a lot of people look back and like find moves and spots to steal from them all the time.
Dude, watching the Powerplex, the way that they executed it, Paul Roma was in the air before the other guy was fully on the mat. Like, that is fucking terrifying.
And yep. Roma's a big guy to be doing that in early 90s. Like, that wasn't really allowed so much. I guess maybe like Bam Bam a little bit, but that was it.
And dude, he landed on some heads too, because he can't like, That's some hard calculations to do in a split second.
Yeah, because he's guessing where they're going to land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they started out getting a bunch of wins over enhancement combos and gotten their first proper feud with the Rockers, meeting them at SummerSlam 90. So they did a whole shtick where I don't know if Sean's leg was really hurt or if it was kayfabe, but it's basically a handicap match with the guys beating up Marty. So according to Paul Roma, plans were to give Power and Glory the belts, but Roma had a lot of issues with Vince when it came to stories, merchandising, what's a burrito. Paul even offered to create their own merch. Like, he's like, I'll do it all. You'd still have a cut. And Vince was just like, meh on the whole thing. There's always been this kind of theory that since Paul and Herc like thought up Power and Glory, they ran with it, it was all their baby, that Vince was never going to get behind it.
Yep, that sounds about right. If it's not Vince McMahon's idea, he's not going to get behind it, because then when it gets successful, those people have power over him, and he'd rather have power over people than do anything that's good or works.
Mm-hmm.
Power and Glory did get a ton of house show title shots at the Hart Foundation, but you know, they never got an actual run. Then at WrestleMania 7, they were straight up squashed by LOD, but it does have a story behind it. So first, Hawk from the Road Warriors called them Sour and Glory, which is just mean and really hurt their team spirit for that night. On top of that, Herc like legit injured his groin and could hardly walk. Paul Roma fucked up his arm so bad that their doctor was like, if you hit it one more good time, you'd lose your arm. I don't know if an amputation was there, but you'd lose control of it. Paul told Vince that they needed to set this one out, but God damn it, pal, I already booked the match. So Vince just like pleaded with them to just give them 1 minute. So they do the job in 59 seconds. It's basically a body slam, a doomsday device, and that's it.
Listen here, pal. I really need you to wrestle. If you go for 5 minutes, then I'll respect you as an individual. But if you only do 1 minute, well, I'll keep your job long enough until I get bored with you and then fire you immediately.
Herc, listen here. I'm going to tell you something you've already heard. I own you.
The bulk of 91 is very similar to Herc's singles run, as far as they're beating an enhancement combo on TV, working a bunch of house shows, but you know, nothing, no big plans for them. But then after SummerSlam 91, Paul Roma left. So the story goes, they were overseas in France when Pat Patterson told Paul that they were going to split up the tag team. And Paul was like, what? We're killing it. Why are you going to break the first good thing that's happened to us in this federation up? Pat said, don't worry about it. We'll take care of you. And Herc, he'll be okay. Kind of implying that they're possibly giving Paul's best friend the boot. Paul was like, fuck this. We finally found something good. You're fucking it up. I'm out. And Paul Roma left WWF. And that left Hercules stranded.
And then Paul Roma became a horseman, which nobody liked. And then Hercules was just twisting in the wind.
Yeah, so with no big plans from the office, he was basically jobbed to death for the rest of his WWF run, which takes us to the greatest night in the history of our sport, February 23rd, 1992, in what would be Herc's last TV match for WWF. Herc was booked to get squashed by Sid at Madison Square Garden in less than a minute, doing the job to Sid's very over at the time powerbomb. But after taking the move, Herc basically just pops up, no-sells it, smirks, heads to the back. The next day would be his last day with WWF.
I feel like this would have been covered more on a Hercules Shooter interview. Yeah. But there's a lot more famous stuff that's happened in a Madison Square Garden show where people break kayfabe.
That's true.
For us to talk about this one.
There's a clip on YouTube, and it is really just, it's like he's getting out of bed to go to work on a Monday. He's like, fuck, all right, I'm going home.
It doesn't look as bad as I think like the clickbait wants you to think. But yeah, he does no sell it. And he's like, I'm not selling this fucking asshole.
Yeah, it's not even that he's like popping up strong style like that didn't fucking hurt. He's just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Pretty much. April of 92, Herc was off to good old WCW, where he'd once again be put under a mask as Super Invader, managed by Harley Race. Super Invader was an Asian man from Bangkok, Thailand, played by a guy who was not Asian, who wore a Land of the Rising Sun headband, which was Japanese.
Love it.
Listen, man. They did a lot of that shit. Like, Paul Diamond being Asian in the Orient Express, Jamie Son, I'm surprised we haven't seen it on WWF recently. Just a masked guy pretending to be Asian who's really white as fuck.
This whole WCW run is very uneventful. He lost a couple world title shots to Sting and Ron Simmons at house shows, I believe, which, yeah, I guess that's cool. He beat Tut Champion at WrestleWar 92, Clash 20. He teamed up with Rick Rude, Jake Roberts, and Vader to beat Sting, Koloff, and Steiners in an elimination match, although Sting did take him out pretty early. And then by the end of 92, he was out. March of 93, Ray headed over to New Japan Pro Wrestling, where he was once again Hercules Hernandez, and he mainly teamed with Scott Norton to form the Jurassic Powers. They won the IWGP tag title from the Hellraisers, Hawk Warrior and Power Warrior, in August and held it for about 4 months till they dropped it right back off to him on January 4th. They also had a series of matches against the Steiners. They made it to the finals of the 93 Super Great Tag League Tournament, where they lost to Muda and Hiroshi Hase. And he wrapped up New Japan Pro Wrestling summer of 84 and then spent the next couple of years in the American Indies, usually taking on like another big name that was between runs with either WCW or WWF.
I mean, that tag team with Scott Norton, I mean, it was formidable. It was booked very well in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think they were like it main event at a Tokyo Dome show. I mean, hell of a fucking tag team. Would have loved to have seen that in the States for sure. But I think Hercules was just very kind of over wrestling in general. I mean, once you've wrestled Hulk Hogan on a Saturday Night's main event, I mean, where else can you really go?
Jurassic Powers or Power and Glory? Where are you going?
Power and Glory. I think the stuff that they did, like I said, people are doing some of their spots even today, and people watch some of their matches and just straight up ripping them off. I feel like they were way ahead of their time. They understood packaging, and it's a shame that Vince just couldn't let that be successful or enable that to be more successful than it was.
Ray's schedule really, really slowed down by 96. And as far as like documented cage matches, he didn't have a lot going on. He officially retired in 99. And like I said, there's no like Hercules shoot. Apparently, he was just working like various jobs there. I've heard selling cars. He worked on like a truck. He just transitioned to civilian life and, you know, hung out with his family, worked, you know, did it.
What a satisfying feeling. Like, hey, I had this really crazy point in my life where I was a wrestler. Yeah, I wrestled Hulk Hogan. I toured. I was a big deal in Japan and I did this. And then you're like, all right, well, I get to go home now and sleep in my bed every night and actually get to see my family as opposed to being apart from them. I made some good money, you know, I got to get some good money and like I have a little bit of fame, so time to just be a normal person. I mean, other than the the end that we're coming up to. That's not great. But yeah, a little sweet spot right here must have felt really good and accomplished about yourself.
And that takes us up to March 6, 2004, when Hercules passed away at the crazy young age of 47. I've heard a couple different things tossed out here. So the cause was heart disease and or a heart attack. I've heard sleep apnea get thrown in as a like cause to the issues. As we know, the 70s and 80s steroid guys had a lot of heart problems. Either way, heart issue and way too young. So Hercules is not in the Hall of Fame. And if this were, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, or a real sport, I'd say this is the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Very Good. But there is for sure worse people in the Hall of Fame that didn't do anything like wrestle Hogan on top. Like, what do you think about Herc being in the Hall of Fame?
I think it's one of those kind of like a Brickhouse Brown's in there, like that wing of wrestlers. Like, I think you could see Herc in there for that. But I don't know. Like, that's a tough one. Like, I feel like there's a lot of people that are at the level of Hercules that are in it. You get that Power of Glory run. You've got that run with Heenan. You got that run against Hogan. And then the territory stuff. Like, I feel like there's a good case. Definitely a good case for him to be in the Hall of Fame, for sure. Definitely not putting in Paul Roma. I feel like I think he burned his bridge with WWF. So I think that Vince would love to do it out of spite. Be like, hey, he's part of Power and Glory. And that other guy in Power and Glory, he's not going to be in. Fuck him. So he's got the resume, and then there's also that spite aspect to it that would make Vince McMahon very happy. So yeah, just saying, I'm surprised that hasn't happened sooner.
Great point, Jake. You've got to factor in Vince McMahon's thought process on everything, because the Hall of Fame is just his favorite toys, basically. And yeah. I don't know at the end of the day if Hercules, once he left the WWE, if Vince ever thought about him again. He's a very solid wrestler, and like, this is aside from everything he's accomplished, I just don't think Vince McMahon just thinks of him much anymore. You leave Vince to his own devices, he's going to have his favorite toys in there, and I just don't think Hercules is one of his favorite toys at the end of the day.
All right, so final thoughts on the mighty Hercules.
Hercules was built. That man had a great body, very vascular. He was also a very solid wrestler, and I think he laid a lot of groundwork for other great workhorses to come in. He's one of the wrestlers that you look back on the history of wrestling, he never made it to the top in a big, big company, but he was a solid territory worker. He did a lot of great things. He looked like $1 million. His tag run in Power and Glory is fantastic. They look good. And I'm glad he got to enjoy a little bit of time outside of wrestling and kind of bask in the fruits of his labor a little bit. But sadly passed away very young, and I think he should be remembered as a very solid wrestler.
Like I said up front, he seems to be slipping through the fingers of wrestling history. A lot of that is because his best work was pre-WWE as far as like in-ring. A lot of it's because WWE chooses not to remember him or honor him, really. He was a jacked guy who could actually wrestle, and if he were here today and added like a moonsault, he'd be over as fuck. Power and Glory was incredible, super underrated tag team. I think if they actually would have let Power and Glory like do the thing, he's in the Hall of Fame. Like if they had a title run, you know, a couple solid Mania matches, this whole legacy is a little different, I think. But the Hercules gimmick was fun and memorable. And yeah, across the board seemed really liked. And that's a pretty cool thing to leave behind.
Yeah, the Power and Glory thing, like it's a big part of Hercules's legacy. And if that legacy of Power and Glory is different, Hercules is viewed very differently. And like I said, some incredible spots. You know, like the first thing that we've said every time we brought up Hercules, like, oh, Jack. Oh, he's a Jack dude. And it just was at the right spot at the right time. But he did some very innovative tag spots. And I don't think he was just a complete utter moron about it. He probably had his thought process on what we should be doing. And hey, this is what I do really well. Is what can you combine on that and make this tag team a little bit better? So maybe he was very ahead of his time and we don't give him enough credit for it. Obviously, like, had a tremendous resume when it comes to territories. You know, it is very sad that he didn't get enough years of, you know, with his family to kind of live a normal life, knowing like, hey, this wrestling thing, I did it. And I did it at the highest level you can do it at and still have a normal life at the end of it. So kind of a bummer that he didn't have all those years to just kind of be a 50, 60-year-old man, just being like, man, like, wrestling was a really cool part of my life, but what I'm doing right now is all right, and I'm getting to play with my grandkids, and that's kind of the big bummer of this whole thing. And I'm glad we got to remember him here on this podcast today.
Right, that is the Mighty Hercules 10 Bell Pod. Thank you, as always, for listening, for donating to the Patreon. Jake, Tyler?
Yeah, let us know what you guys want to see. Patreon-exclusive episodes. We've got a fun one that we're about to do, and we're open to suggestions on other things you guys want to hear. You want another drunk pro wrestling history? Let us know. Give us some ideas, and we'll bring it to you.
Make sure to leave a review. It's very important on whatever platform that you listen to this. Make sure you leave a review to push us up the charts. It's greatly appreciated.
And we'll close this out by saying, slavery is bad. Do not like it here at 10 Bell Pod. Goodbye.
Oh, is that a joke, or should we wait a week for the people to laugh?
Hey, Spencer found a Groupon for pro wrestling training for $80 for a month. That's a scam, right?
You might get bumped around a little bit, chopped a little bit. You'll get your money's worth, but you ain't going to get anything from it, probably.
You'll learn a lesson for sure.
Yeah. Read over that waiver. Read over that waiver real closely. And if you walk into an apartment and Bill Apter's there with a camera, run out. That's all I got to say.
What? That's the sound of a rattlesnake in your earbuds. That's right, if you didn't want the stone cold Steve Austin experience, you need to shut them earbuds off right now. As a matter of fact, why don't you just take them ears and rip them off? Because if you don't want stone cold talking to you, then you don't deserve ears. Can I get a hell yeah? I'm gonna go ahead and assume you said it. I'm here today because I want to tell you about my friends over at 10 Bell Pod. 10 Bell Pod. Tyler Wood, Nick Alexander, and Jake, the Man Scout Man, and bringing you some of the best wrestling content on the internet. Now, can I get a hell yeah? While you're giving me a hell yeah, why don't you go ahead and pop over to their Patreon? Go ahead and give a subscription. And why don't you hop your fat little ass right over to Pro Wrestling Tees and get a 10 Bell Pod exclusive t-shirt featuring all three of these beautiful men? Might be saying, what? What? Stone Cold, you think these men are beautiful? God damn it, I do. Now you get over there and you buy that t-shirt before I stomp a mud hole in you and walk it dry. Now let me get a hell yeah.